Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is Friday. That means it's true crime time. And I do have Jen with me. However, we are going to shake things up a little bit on the true crime part because we're going to talk about the true crime at the end rather than at the beginning because we want to kind of set up some things. And first of all, Jen, how are you?
I'm good. Feeling a little naughty. Might get a little nautical naughty here.
Oh, that's true. Oh, I like how you did that. That's a nice pun, naughty.
I'm so corny, it's unreal, but yeah, I'm feeling naughty.
We are going to talk about something that I've talked about for a long time, but in a different kind of context. I've always talked about yachting and my contact in the yachting world, Bonnie, who is in the Middle East. But this is a little bit different. We are going to talk about yachting and escorts, and then kind of some bad things that can happen to people who are on yachts and the kind of lives and what they're dealing with. And it's kind of based around this company called Cinderella Escorts in a way. And, you know, these super yachts and the things that happen on them, you know, I've always talked about it more from, you know, the celebrities who go yachting, you know, to supplement their income. And this is kind of almost taking it from the high-end yachter's point of view in a way?
You know, definitely. This is your super yacht owners, your very elite men.
You know, exactly.
Hire up someone that is professional, kind of no strings attached, not get themselves into too much trouble. They call up the Cinderella Escorts.
Yeah, and honestly, I had heard of the Cinderella Escorts, but I hadn't really ever gone to their website or anything, and Jen was said, you got to go look at this website. And so I went and looked at the website and everything, and it kind of blew my mind how just upfront and public this is, and there is no shame in their game at all. But the thing is, these prices, you know, are so outrageous compared to, you know, other things. And so these men who, you know, have these super yachts, they kind of anchor them in one spot, essentially. They rarely even move these yachts. I mean, it's expensive to move them, but, you know, they rarely even do, and they avoid taxes. They register these ships to shell companies offshore in countries like Panama or the British Virgin Islands. And, you know, because they don't have to register under the flag where the yacht was purchased or mainly floats. It's the same kind of thing with the cruise ship industry. None of the cruise lines are registered under U.S. Flags. And these yachts are the same way. They can register under any country they want, you know?
Yeah, because those rules are more lax. They don't want to register under a United States flag because it comes with the rules. And, you know, when they get out into international water, they want to pick a Bahamian flag, something like that, that keeps them. Basically, if they don't like what's happening, they commit a crime or something, they can take their anchor and take off.
I know. That's the crazy thing. And one of the things that you guys can kind of maybe relate to it is back in the early days of casinos outside of Las Vegas and stuff, they had, you know, the ships, the floating casinos. And originally they would take those out 12 miles and to get into international waters and you could gamble there. And then they kind of amended those, and then they just had to be floating at a dock, and then that just kind of changed, you know. But when you do raise this anchor, you know, the employees, the crew, they're not afforded the same, you know, legal protections, you know, as citizens on land, you know. And it becomes difficult to determine, you know, which laws and rights apply.
Yeah, and the men know this, that the ones that are the yacht owners, they know that there's no eyes, there's no ears out there, they're in international waters. So say, for instance, they're trailing between two different international borders, then you run into which laws and rights even apply, what country even has jurisdiction. It gets more muddy from there. These men know that. That's why you see a lot of them, two more than others, or two very popular ones that rarely, if ever, come off their yachts because of this reason. They know what they can get by with.
One of the things that I thought that you said that was really, that you told me before is that they pay to be invisible, essentially.
Absolutely.
And, you know, because it might appear that they're staying in one place, you know, because the majority of high-end super yacht owners enjoy their pleasure boats, but they don't sail them. And like you said, they have them, they rarely come off the yacht at all. But then you have the billionaires who have their crew sail the boat out you know, into the international waters to their preferred destination, the dock. And then the yacht kind of owner flies in on a private jet, just kind of coming and going as he pleases.
Yeah, that's why when people look at the Instagrams of some of the really popular yacht owners that allow you to know the names of their yachts and where they are, they're like, oh, you know, the yacht's finally moving. He must be going to here, there, or everywhere. Well, no, it's the crew that's moving the ship because the owner doesn't want to go through the rough waters and things like that. He's going to jet in later, and he might not even jet into some of the places that the ship stops along the way. See, they're just tricky like that.
They are. And, you know, they have the money to make it tricky like that. And, you know, all on the super yachts, you know, all the crew, most of the guests, not all the guests, but most of the guests have to sign NDA agreements that pertain to confidentiality. There's usually no filming or no photography or anything that kind of, you know, would not violate the privacy, but anything that will, you know, let anybody know kind of what's going on. There's no posting to social media or anything like that. You won't see posting or advertising the destination of the yacht, because then you're going to be revealing the movements of the owner. And the yacht owners don't want that.
No, not at all. Because if they get a location stamp or something like that, you're going to have a lot of eyes prying in on them. And like I said, they don't want eyes and ears. That's why they go out to the water to begin with. But when you look at that Cinderella site that I sent you to, because let me tell you how I came up on that, is that the media used to push that site. I'm talking mainstream media.
Yes.
At night, it was all about Cinderella escorts.
So I am on the website right now. It's just Cinderella-escorts.com. And they are fully out in the open. I mean, this is an escort site that's got a press clipping section like you would find on just a normal business. And it is filled with, you know, press and interviews, because the owner of it was a teenager when he started. And he kind of became famous for auctioning off virgins. And I went and looked today, and there are about 200 virgin auctions going on right now on this website. There were, I think, 4 from the United States, or 5, and they all have videos of the people and everything, and, you know, price ranges and things like that. And it just kind of blew my mind, because I remember back in the day, there was a story once about it was an American. She goes, I've decided I'm going to, you know, auction off my virginity. And that thing was front page news for 2 weeks. And here you literally hundreds, and each one has a video. This is not somebody that's just taken, you know, Instagram models and put them on here and pretend that they're auctioning off their virginity or something like that. These are real people that each have 2 or 3 minute, you know, YouTube videos, essentially. And then how much the current price of the auction and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, their ads, they're in classified sections of magazines. Like you said, they're in newspapers. The mainstream media promotes them as the best known agency in the world, and they have playmates, current and former playmates, penthouse models, porn stars, Miss Universe contestants, actresses and models, you know, available for these arrangements. And unlike the ones that I talk about with actors and actresses, these are putting their names front and center, you know.
Oh, yeah, they have their actual headshots up there. You know, basically, it's a resume of who they are. And then they have, of course, the preferred section, which is just these little black boxes that are secretive. And it'll tell you you're bidding on, let's say, a Victoria's Secret model. You're bidding on someone that is so A-list, we can't tell you who it is unless you sign NDAs with us. And then we'll place you with the type of woman that you're looking for. They put you through a series of questionnaires. So they have people that are also hidden.
Yeah, but even the crazy thing about that is, even though that they're hidden, just the fact that somebody's on there like that, it's a little bit more different than the ones that, you know, I've always dealt with before, where there is a cloud kind of service that these people use. But this is just open to the public. And one of the things is, so you have this company, and they auction off the virginities of people that are 18 plus to the highest bidder. They take about 20% a cut of the sale, and sometimes they take up to 50%, and it's kind of crazy. And some of the auctions go into the millions of dollars. And they claim that if a virgin comes to them, they have her check to prove that she's in fact a virgin, and I'm not even sure how you can actually prove that. And they put her through a psych evaluation to ensure she understands and agrees to what she's doing, and saying, you know, it's one of those things you can never get back. And then, you know, these escorts who auction off their virginity, they said they'd rather profit off their virginity rather than just give it away to free to some guy they may never see again, much less marry. And, you know, they claim that they're keeping it above the legal age of consent.
Yeah. And so these girls get up there, and basically how they justify it is they say, I have rent, I have student loans, I have all these things I want to do in life. I want to go into business. And, you know, what better way than to auction off my virginity? So it seems like they have some type of vetting process to where they make it appear. And perhaps these girls, you know, they don't have a problem with it, but they appear to just be absolutely okay with everything that they're doing.
And, you know, so essentially they do this all in Germany. The person has to fly to Germany, and then the one who's, you know, losing their virginity, they fly to Germany, and it all takes place under German law. And if the bidder, who's coming from anywhere in the world, would like a second opinion on certifying the virgin, then the escort is agreed to be examined, you know, at a location. And it's just, it's crazy.
You become merchandise. You know, the person that is bidding on you wants to know exactly what they're getting. I mean, in a way, it's disgusting. In another way, I mean, you're putting yourself in a retail market. So, yeah, they want to know, what am I purchasing? You know, is it authentic?
One of the things that we're not really going to talk about here, but I'm just wondering about out loud, is that after this happens, you know, do they go back to normal life? Are they hoping that this person will, you know, want to keep maintaining them in a lifestyle, you know? Because this agency does supply professional models, you know, and companions to wealthy men. And these escorts sign a, quote, relationship contract to ensure a smooth play-for-pay experience. And so even though the agency doesn't, you know, explicitly promise client sex, you know, it is implied. And, you know, these contracts include, like, personality profiles and monetary obligations and privacy agreements with penalties and responsibility assignment of birth control and STD protection, safe words, availability and duration. I mean, these are lengthy contracts, which you know, when you think about going to the opposite end of the spectrum and just finding somebody on the street and paying them whatever for sex compared to something like this.
Well, you're getting these high-end men. A lot of them are conglomerates of multiple companies, if not celebrities, you know, A-list. They want absolutely discretion. They want you to be just discreet, very private. They don't want any problems. Did these contracts guarantee you won't have problems? No, but it can kind of help mitigate, you know, and lessen it. So yeah. That's why they have all this.
And this particular agency, you know, so they allow their escorts to sign up as they please and come and go as they please or whatever. And, you know, if the adults consent to sex during this date, then the agency says that's between the two consenting adults. But how they get around being called out for prostitution is by avoiding that they sell and profit off of sex. What they're doing is they're just kind of, you know, what every escort always says, where it's just companion arrangements, you know, and it's a girlfriend experience in the sense that these men are getting a girlfriend for whatever duration they request. And the company says, you know, without the drama or judgment, attachment or pressure of maintaining a traditional relationship. You know, again, this is different than, you know, say a normal, regular kind of sugar daddy site or something like that, because there's all these contracts and everything.
Yeah, so you get the pretty woman experienced in your mind. You have the guy that is going from city to city to city. He doesn't have time for hangups or problems. So he gets the pretty woman. He keeps her for a night. Maybe he likes her, keeps her for a week. They can keep you for a month. You're asking if the same guys will stick with the girl who they took the virginity of, or if they'll move on. It depends on the guy. You know, some want a different flavor every single time they order. Sometimes, you know, they might fall for you and keep you around for a little while, but and mostly it seems like eventually these women get, quote, dispatched right back to where they came from. So they don't keep them very long.
No. And, you know, the owner of it, he says that he has arranged escorts for Hollywood stars and politicians, and he said that one of the crazy, this is a quote from them, one of the craziest guys is a Hollywood star who signed a contract with us that he wanted to play out a blackmailing role play. So one of our escorts plays out a scenario where she threatens to expose private pictures of him if he doesn't go shopping with her, kiss her high heels, and lick her feet. He never actually has sex with her, but spends $30,000 a month to keep playing the scenario. And his contract has a code word with which he can stop this role play whenever he wants. I mean,
that... I'm sorry, but that's a weird fantasy. Oh, please blackmail me. Let me know what that feels like. I mean,
I just feel just like this celebrity could get away with paying a lot less money per month, you know, for he's not even having sex. I'm sure that there's people who'd be willing to do it for $3,000-$4,000 a month instead of $30,000 a month.
Right, but would those people sign all these NDAs and be backed by an agency and then walk away? See, these guys don't want strings attached. They don't want the girl crying up saying, "But I love you. You know, don't leave." He's like, "No, you're leaving."
and the escorts there, and like I said, this Cinderella escorts, they make their escorts available for interviews, the ones that want to do it. The owner of the company makes himself available for interviews. They have a press section, for goodness sake, on their website. You go find me another escort company anywhere in the world that has a press section on their website. It's not going to happen. But the escorts say that it's no different than going out, say, like on a typical Friday night date that they'd arrange for themselves, except that with this agency, you have someone in your corner to ensure you're compensated. And they know that this is a pool of very wealthy clients. This is not somebody who, you know, saved up $400 and is going to hire an escort for the night. You know, these are very wealthy people. And, you know, they have, like you said, like these fetishes and wants and needs, but don't want them splashed to the tabloids. You know, they want, you know, professional contracts. And it just... You know, but some of the women do build a rapport. But like you said, you know, they could also just go away after one time. And it's just, it's kind of crazy. And there is a high turnover rate. I mean, obviously, you know, because the escorts don't get to select the men in front.
No, and not all of the men are going to treat the escorts nicely. You know, they're not going to spoil you. A lot of them have demands that are quite derogatory. You know, yes. They're not... feminine friendly, so you might get a guy like that, and I wonder in the end what those contracts are like. Does the agency sit you down and say, hey, if you want to make more money, you need to be okay with at least some of these things? Because imagine they fill out an application and it's very dainty, and then the owner probably slides it back and says, hey, you know, hey, be a little more lenient. And then where does it go from there? That might be a reason why they have such a high turnover rate.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I read something that a sex worker once wrote, and she said something to the effect of, if you want to be a sex worker or something like that, what you should do is you should go on a city bus, look at everybody on the bus and say, I'm willing to have sex with them. Because that's essentially, because these escorts don't get to select the men up front, right? They're not seeing a picture.
You don't get a picture, and you can get any type of guy if he's got any kind of money. I mean, you could get a guy that has just been saving up for the longest time. He's not a conglomerate. He's not a CEO of anything. But if he's got the cash, he's purchasing you that for that evening. So you could get him, you know, what is he like?
And this, it kind of fits in perfectly that the agency has a good relationship with this yacht community, because as we talked about earlier, you know, all the parties prefer situations with less prying eyes. You don't have people who work at hotels, like receptionists, people at front desk, as I know, because I get a lot of my tips from hotel workers. And, you know, you don't have any neighbors. Nobody's there monitoring the comings and goings. You just fly these women out to a private yacht, you know, cuts out all of that ambient noise and just makes everybody involved more relaxed. It's, you know, all about the privacy. And no one in these circles wants to be judged. They just want to have, you know, a mutually beneficial good time, you know? And by mutually beneficial, I mean money. you know.
I'm laughing because, yes, they're avoiding crazy days and nights is what they're doing. They're flying themselves in, and they're flying in their escorts, you know, so that they don't get seen by the receptionist or, I don't know, one of us hiding underneath one of the drink carts, you know, that you push that have the tablecloth. Yes. Yeah, they're peeping at you. So,
and you know, the money is the most important thing. Now, according to the agency and the testimonials and things like that, the top escorts take their job very seriously. They want to have as many dates as possible, establish regular work, and then yachting and escorting kind of becomes their career for as long as they can endure it or stomach it, you know. And unlike some, you know, professions or, you know, acting, especially acting, because as you get older, the roles kind of diminish or you're getting put in different things. But so then they move into escorting, which are all ages. And, you know, we think of the younger ones as, you know, likely being the most popular, but some of the most requested ones, according to the agency, are in their mid-40s. You know,
yes, because they have been around. They know the games, the fetishes, the role playing, what they call the flogging. They are the highest requested, like the 40 plus. Their oldest one that is requested the most, like, is 43 years old. Like, my mind was blown when I read that.
And, you know, I guess it's, you know, good company maybe, or conversation.
Really good conversation. It made you feel comfortable, and you can ask her for just, you know, anything. You felt like you were just with a kindred spirit who was also highly sexy, you know, and willing to get down to business.
And, you know, some men remain have since this agency, you know, was, I think it's been 6 or 7 years now. So they've been with the agency the whole time. Some of them just a little while. Sometimes these guys try and, you know, make one of the escorts a housewife, but the agency said that, you know, that's not usually recommended, because the idea is this no strings attached kind of play and release. And that the motto on yachts is, you know, to stay a renter.
That is true. What floats the boat is to stay a renter, because there's been Mexican presidents. There has been different types of politicians that have went on to marry their yacht girl, and it did not work out. They went from billionaires to barely millionaires, and also barely made it out by the skin of their teeth. So you don't want to do that, because these women have been in it for so long, and I'm not knocking them. It's a fine profession if that's what they choose. But yeah, they've been in it for so long, they're all about the money. It's just, it's ingrained in them. They want to do good. They want to make money.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, obviously there's critics of these kind of things, you know, and there are a lot of escort agencies that are horrible human trafficking traps. They force people into prostitution against their will. They collect their profits and hold them captive. And, you know, Cinderella actually claims to kind of be a victim of the porn industry, who, you know, send in women to destroy their business, the ones that, you know, are not signed to Cinderella. It's all about competition, you know, and there have been multiple hit pieces that have appeared against the agency by women who claim to have been duped out of money. They'll claim that they were booked for celebrity parties, but after arriving, there were no celebrities, but just men who claimed the escorts had to perform a, quote, trial run to prove they're good enough to be recommended to the celebrities. And they'll say that the agency just kind of offered them three options. You can either become a sex escort and make bank, become a celebrity sex favorite party girl, or offer no actual sex and allow us to train you to be a dominatrix.
And reportedly, no matter what number you select, you still end up doing a trial run. You know, and that's just what these porn girls say, the ones that are, you know, putting out the hit pieces. Cinderella does respond. They go online, they make YouTube videos, they will serve it right back to these people that try to trash them. So it's hard to tell who's telling the truth. You know, you have to go and research and judge for yourself. But what these women get into is the really, really dark side of human trafficking, the disgusting side that I hate so much, where they claim that when you arrive somewhere, your passport is stripped from you, because they want to remove you out of your country immediately. And if they take your passport, then you're at their mercy.
Yeah. And they see, that's, I think that, you know, with Cinderella, because it's all contractual and everything. But I went over to the website really, really quickly. And there are, if you porn stars and playmates, 28, 32, 36, 40, with their names and their locations. I'm just seeing how many pages there are. There's about 60 right now that are either Playboy, Playmates, Penthouse, Pets, or porn stars that, you know, are booked through this agency.
And they keep coming back. So obviously Cinderella escorts it. And we're not promoting any of this. No. We're just giving you a 360 point of view of what everything that's out there. But it just looks like Cinderella escorts, you know, might actually have their act together. Because like you said, these girls, they keep coming back. These are names that are on the site. They seem to be enjoying themselves.
Yes. And, you know, the bad part is when you – not the bad part. When you look at the prices for celebrities, it says that celebrities, you have to contact, you know, the agency for most of them. But I'll give you an idea. So there's a porn star here. Her name is Regina Moon. She's in Greece. And she doesn't – you have to basically get her for the month, and it's 15,000 euros.
Well, yeah, it probably depends on what Regina has going on. You know, if she is the babe of the month on whatever cover of whatever magazine she's working for at the moment, perhaps there's price inflation there. If she can go up on her price, if she's in less demand, I'm sure that the price goes down. Same with all those penthouse models or Playboy models. Just depends on what they're into at the time.
Yeah, and apparently, you know, it just Cinderella. So there's another. There's what was it? It was called Jet Set, right? The Jet Set babes, and that's kind of also a yachting kind of circle. And that's,
those are your more sugar babies. These are the ones that want to forge a relationship with the guy, get cozy, be on call several times, not just see him once.
Yeah. And, you know, they are kind of this is more of the kind that Bonnie deals with, where, you know, you fly somebody in maybe and you see them once a month and you kind of keep them on retainer and, you know, and you're kind of matching more for a more permanent kind of relationship that happens after the pay or play kind of thing. And, you know, it's a little bit different because a lot of these this different class, they don't necessarily want to do what some of the escorts are willing to do for the money. And, you know, it's just kind of it's almost like these little levels, like you have this Cinderella escort kind of thing. Then you have celebrities and actresses and stuff like that, which, you know, maybe one day or one week. And then you have this lesser kind of level Jet Set babes, which are still above, say, an Instagram model, which is still above an escort you would find, you know, on Craigslist, or and then, you know, the step below that. And it's just kind of this hierarchy. But the problem is that, you know, because Cinderella and these other ones, you know, will take care of these models, you know, fairly and decently. But it's the fake modeling agencies, the ones that, you know, are smuggled into the trade against their will and things like that. Now, yachters, don't get me wrong, you know, yachters want those too, for sure. But that's, I have no doubts that somebody who's used Cinderella escorts has also done some horrible things with, you know, human trafficking or somebody, you know, who is being held against their will. Maybe they don't know it. But, you know, there's all kinds of women from Eastern Europe who are flown, you know, to the south of France every year to be just shipped out to the yachts. And when they're finished, then their, you know, pimp takes them right back and then waits for the next customer kind of thing. You know, those ones can be all ages rather than this 18 plus, where Cinderella claims that everybody's, you know, of consenting age.
Yeah, when you hear of the stories coming out of Yacht Week, not all of those women are active participants. That's the sad part. And it depends on whatever the trafficker orders. You know, sometimes those women or children get to go back, and sometimes it just depends on what was ordered, whether they are returned or not. So, yeah, that happens.
With the 12-year-olds and the 14-year-old. And, the, you know, think about Nadia Marchenko, who's been with him since she was 14 years old. You know, now, but when she was 14 years old. And like you said at the very beginning, you know, what goes on in international waters kind of normally stays there. You know, like, who is the one that's going to prosecute them? Which country? And, you know, then you get, well, who was on board? Who was in charge kind of thing?
Right. You know, is the country in on it? Because you have some of these men and they will go and dock their yachts under diplomatic bridges. They know exactly what water they're sitting in, who's on the bridge above them that will protect them, and the answer to absolutely no one.
And also, you have to remember that if you're in the Mediterranean, and let's say you let somebody go that you have raped or something, and then she goes back and reports it, this yacht can move into a different country's waters and say, we were here the whole time, you know? We weren't in this other country's waters. And, you know, it's just, it's so easy to get away with that kind of stuff. You know, the rules are lax. There's no eyes, you know, and
that's why they tell the majority of these escorts, whatever you do, you know, if things go bad and they don't honor their contract, the one that you signed up for, do not fight with them on the boat. Try to make the best of it. Try to get yourself off the boat, because the last thing that you want to do is go missing in the international waters, because there is no one coming to look for you.
No, I mean, that's the kind of thing. And, you know, you have, you know, most escorts and these clients, according again to Cinderella Escorts, you know, they honor the relationships contracts without fault. And, you know, that's a different kind of thing. But then there's room for things to get out of hand if you don't have these kind of contracts. And you, like you said, an escort's out there essentially on their own, you know, and, you know, yachters claim it's kind of rare for, you know, something unforeseen situations to arise, really, but they can, you know, because you have drugs, you have alcohol, you have men who, you know, favor the elements of surprise. Escorts have been beaten, gang raped. They're often forced to deal with golden showers or, you know, being defecated on or choked until they pass out. And what are you going to do? Or they'll be tied up and left for hours and stuff. Some escorts will sign up for that kind of thing. And you can see it on Cinderella, this thing they have, they will do this and they will do that kind of thing. But how many of these situations is it up front like that? You know, not too often. Most of the time you're just going to be, and I always talk about Dubai and, you know, these Instagram models, they go over there and they're flying first class and they're taking selfies on in the airplane on seats they couldn't afford otherwise. And then they go there and they're in this foreign country that, despite, you know, being quote unquote open, is not open, at where, you know, if a woman goes to report a rape, she's the one who's thrown in jail, not the guy, you know. And I don't think that they always are aware of that when they're signing up to go do this kind of thing. And then the next thing you know, they are, you know, they're engaging in activity that they didn't know that they were going to get into.
Yeah, another reason why they tell you if you're on foreign waters, don't fight with the guy, do the best, and then try to get yourself to, you know, your American shore or wherever you're from, and then get off the boat and get your agency to fight for you, because these men can turn it around on you. The women that do go on to complain, like you said, they're jailed or they're killed, they're stoned. All of those stories are out there. And sometimes, you know, you'll get one of the billionaires who's just had a bad day, received a bad phone call. Maybe he was nice to you the first hour you were with him, but the second hour, now he's in a really bad mood. He beats the crap out of you. I mean, he beats you to a bloody pulp. Maybe he gives you settlement money later, but guess what? You're using your settlement money now to fix your teeth and your face. So was it worth it? No. And there's been really high-end models that have went through that. I mean, A-list.
Yeah. And you know what? Agencies will say that they're blacklist the clients, but they won't. They won't.
No,
because they're giving them money. They can always find another model. They're not always going to be able to find some guy who can pay them $20,000 or $30,000. So that's not going to happen. And you know, one of the things that I know that you've talked about before is on cruises, is if you get killed on a cruise, you know, it just, you know, that's kind of, you're signing your rights away. You know, you are going to, it's a lot easier to get away with a crime on a cruise ship than it is for anything else.
Absolutely. Yeah. Most cruise crimes are not reported. They're not documented. And the ones that are very horrific, and they don't even make the news. I mean, every once in a while, you'll hear about like the George, the newlywed that went over. That was horrible. You hear about Amy Bradley who went missing off a ship. Yeah, that makes the news. But some of the newer ones, they're terrible. And like I said, they sell under these international flags. No one has to look for you. They sell under no rules. The FBI cannot board. So if you're American, you sign your life away when you get on that cruise ship. The FBI cannot board the ship. You know, the crews will normally say no, it's bad for business. They'll do everything to sweep it under their little coral reef rug, and, you know, they'll keep sailing.
And the thing is that the people that are employed as crew, think about this. You know, the cruise lines will say, well, we do background checks. They don't do background checks. All these people are from foreign countries who could be using a different name and everything. And the cruise companies, they're not doing background checks. It's not at all like that. And so if you think about somebody, if you're a thief or something like that, and you get put on a cruise ship to work and you have all this opportunity to steal and you have traffickers, obviously, and smugglers because you're going into different ports. You know, they're sailing there right with you. Ships employ felons all the time. And, you know, but the cruise crimes really make the news because the crews, what they'll do is they'll just throw a whole bunch of money at you to keep quiet about it. So that way more people will go on the ship. You know?
They'll either pay you off, or what happens is if you have someone go overboard or they just go missing, because like you said, that there are these smugglers and different people that are sailing right alongside you, because what better way to move things than to move it with a lot of people? And then you can blame anybody if something goes down. It's not my dope. It's her dope. It's not my child. It's their child. So you have those people, and then you have stories like Amy Bradley, stuff like that, where she could have been hit over the head, smuggled out under a laundry cart or something. You know, you just never know on these cruises.
So going back to yachts, there's been a lot of talk lately about Naomi Campbell, and because everybody knows that she was one of Epstein's kind of pass around kind of things. Now, she's never been linked to an escort agency. She never will be linked to an escort agency. I doubt that she's on Cinderella Escorts because she can make her own connections. But, you know, she is definitely a yachter, always been a yachter. And she has had quite the history of just creating havoc on board a yacht. I know Naomi Campbell creating havoc. Who would have thunk it? but one time she had this. So she was on Flavio Briatore's yacht. He is also, if you ever want to see some pictures that'll blow your mind, just Google Flavio yachting and, you know, people, you know, it's just, and you're seeing, oh my gosh, this guy is, you know, 300 pounds or whatever. And then all these supermodels, oh, I love him. I love him. Oh my gosh, you know, but she had this blowout quarrel with him while on his yacht. And he kicked her off, and then she was with this very married Russian billionaire, Vladimir Dornin, who I've talked about before because he's the one who had her beat up. And then she went yachting with this other Russian billionaire, Mikhail Prokhorov. And then there was a Dubai prince, Badr Jafar. And she flew into this rage when the cruise chef suggested a menu appetizer. So what she did was she destroyed multiple rooms of the yacht all over someone trying to feed her. and of course, you know, she's on Epstein's private jet logs. And there was all kinds of encounters with if she thought that one of Epstein's people was, you know, moving in on somebody that she had her eyes on, you know. That's just, you know, that's not going to happen. You know, Naomi, like I said, she ended up getting beat up by Dorian and then she was wheelchair bound. And it's all because of this person. And I've talked about it before, who was on the reality show, The Face, with her. And Dorian took a liking to this model that was on the show. And Naomi started giving a hard time. And then when she went, when this model went with Dornan, and then Naomi lost her mind, and so Dornan had his people beat her up. I mean, like, brutally beat her up. And, you know, you haven't heard Naomi, you know, say anything bad about that person since.
No.
And one of the things that's kind of interesting, just talking quickly about the laws, is that because if the yachts don't actually go into the waters of a country, you know, while everybody's on board, remember, a lot of these yachts, these super yachts, they have helicopter things. And so the person can get on the helicopter and go to whatever country they want to be in. But so they're not boarded by, you know, immigration controls for that particular country. You know, each country has laws that allow, you know, law enforcement, customs, and immigration to board. But first of all, they have to know that you're in their waters, and then they have to go out to them. And a lot of these countries that are, say, a little bit less first world, do they really want to tick off the super yachter? Or even if they go out there, they're just going to get bribed.
Normally they're on the payroll. International waters, you're less likely to be boarded by any type of customs or someone trying to check out your boat. National waters, a little more trickier. You know, you probably will be boarded if everything looks okay. You know, they'll come on, speak. They realize they're kind of imposing. They get on and get off. The Caribbean is really known for officers boarding for immigration type issues. But other than that, you know, if you're in that 1% highly rich, you've probably already bought someone off and they know they can sail as they please.
Yeah, I mean, Ghislaine always bragged about, you know, not only holding multiple visas, but not really needing them because she could kind of go through seamlessly different countries because, you know, British nationalities can go through, they're allowed to go to the most countries without visas, essentially. And then, you know, if you have the political connections or diplomatic immunity or the extra passports like Epstein and others have, Epstein's not the only one who has an extra passport.
Right.
You know, friends in high places, you know, they're not going to be concerned with sea laws. And billionaires can buy off people and influence officials to look away. We're not talking about, like Jen said, in the Caribbean, it's completely different because there's so much drug trafficking and smuggling that goes on. You are going to get boarded by somebody. But when you're in the Mediterranean or you're in, you know, off the coast of Croatia and that sees the name of it's escaping me, Adriatic Sea, something like that, you know, there's a lot of countries that you can easily pay people off. And it's a totally different kind of thing.
Yeah. Super lax law. So the super yacht owners, they will operate on a 10-10 stay perfect, but the crew knows that they're less likely to be boarded. So there's all kind of things going on board there. You know, you hear about the drugs flowing freely and stuff like that. I tend to think they don't carry as much drugs as they claim because that's hard to get rid of.
Just that night. You know, somebody's maybe bringing them for one night because that's the one thing. If you get caught with escorts on board who maybe have some visa issues or passport issues or something like that, the authorities aren't going to do anything. They don't care. You know, unless these girls are underage, or unwilling or being raped or something, they care about drugs. That's what they care about. And, you know, it's a high risk kind of thing because, again, you don't know what kind of water you've drifted into. Have you drifted into the waters of Libya where you're going to have these drugs and you're going to be in jail or maybe killed for them?
You know, Philippines, anything like that. I mean, if you don't know where you're going, you don't have a good crew, good captain, you wander somewhere you shouldn't. And the penalty for drugs is death.
Yeah.
And
you know,
if you don't die, you're going to probably hope that you did because they're going to take everything that you own out from under you. They're definitely going to seize the yacht. Everybody on board is going to go to jail unless you have your one little fall guy.
Yeah. You know, and you talked about Amy Bradley. We had Natalie Wood, of course. You know, that wasn't really a yacht. It was more of a ship. But then we had Robert Maxwell. He always had, prostitutes on his yacht. And remember, he got killed off of his yacht. One of the things, and the crime, I guess, that I want to talk about is, Sinead McNamara. And to me, it's probably, one of the more famous cases of somebody who's on a yacht who got killed or committed suicide, and which I really don't think.
Something happened. They were really sloppy on this one because you don't hear about a lot of these yacht girls that either fall off or something bad happens to them. But with Sinead, you know, her story did leak out and it's as bad as you could think.
Yeah. I mean, she was found hanging from ropes off the back deck of this super yacht. It's called the Mayan Queen 4. And it was owned by, or still owned by, this billionaire Mexican mining magnate named Alberto Balleros. And I believe he is the third richest man in Mexico and in the top 25 or so richest men in the world.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's a mining magnate. So he comes from the trade finance and mining companies. And but this girl, she was 20 years old. So we need to tell him, she's 20. She was Australian. And this happened back in August of 2018.
Yeah, it didn't even happen that long ago. So we're not stretching back in time or anything on this. And they were sailing through Greece. And then a boat captain from a different ship, not the Mayan Queen, said they spotted what they called, quote, a traumatic situation. And they alerted the Mayan Queen crew to act. And apparently they found McNamara still alive.
So they say, you know, that boat captain, this whole story is just fishy to begin with. But the boat captain said that he saw something that looked just, it was a situation. He yelled out to the woman, you know, hey, what are you doing? You know, get up. Obviously, the people say she was so gravely injured, so horrifically injured. And these are like sailor men, Navy men, you name it, British sailors. They said it was so disgusting that you could tell she was dead. So this boat captain motions for the yacht that she's actually hanging off of, you know, to tend to her. And they claim that they tried to resuscitate her, and then they thought maybe they did. But, I mean, if she was that gravely injured, what were they resuscitating?
And can you resuscitate somebody who's hanged themselves? Because haven't you cut off the ability to put air back into the lungs? I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I'm not going to get into as graphic as the report is, but when you realize how little left was hanging, I don't see how anybody could resuscitate her. But the story gets fishier from there, because they said that she fell into a coma after they resuscitated her. So then they spent 30 minutes, by the way, trying to revive her. To me, they spent 30 minutes trying to figure out how they're going to fix this.
Yes.
So then they drive her to the state hospital of Greece, because they were docking off the coast of
Greece. Yeah,
they were off the island of Greece. So then they decide they're going to rush her to the hospital. And then the hospital, they get her there and they say, we're not equipped for this. So then they're going to airlift her to Athens, Greece. And then she dies allegedly in flight. So, I mean, how many times do they have her dying?
I know. And this Alberto guy, the third richest man in Mexico, he supposedly jetted off 48 hours prior to the death. One of the things that was interesting is, you know, they ruled her death a suicide because of some messages that she had posted on Instagram and things like, my head is all over the shop today. Take me back to this where my only worry was not cracking my skull open. But the thing is, here's why I don't think it's a suicide. She has tons of pictures on there and bikinis and things like that. And she was excited because her family was coming like in 3 days or something like that.
So she had joined Yacht Week kind of towards the end of the season, and they told her, you're not going to get very long, but you'll get your fill of it. She was really excited. She said, just put me in a position that you'd put, you know, the guys in. I want to be right in the action. So they did that. So it was ending, and she has these posts where, like you said, she's gorgeous. She's got these bikini shots, and then she's got these kind of like maybe depressing posts. But they're not that depressing, because when you read it, you know, I want to go back to the time to where all I had to worry about was cracking my skull. You know, on a deck, to me, that says I want to stay on the ship, maybe. You know, I want that to be my only worry. Yeah, I wondered if she was upset that she was leaving. But then again, she posted just after that, happy birthday to the most amazing big sister ever. It's only 5 days. I can't wait to see you. So, I mean,
why would she agree for her family to fly to a foreign country to celebrate her sister's birthday? If she's going to kill herself, the family's already bought the tickets and all this kind of stuff. Oh, you know what I'm going to do instead for my sister's birthday is I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah, I mean, she knew that her sister would go her whole life having remembered that her birthday was the date that something tragically happened to her sister. I mean, would somebody do that? It doesn't seem like this girl would. I mean, can someone make a suicidal, you know, judgment call in a blink of an eye? Yes, but it seems unlikely just with how much she loved her family and the fact that her family learned that she was dead while they were in the air. You know, it's just, it's super fishy.
It is. And here's the other thing. So the crew members, of course, who are all getting paid by Alberto, they all claim that she was in high spirits, you know, again. Okay. So why would you commit suicide? Now, the family said that 48 hours before her death, she called them crying about an incident involving another crew member. And remember, it's been 48 hours since Alberto left.
So isn't that something? You have the not implying that he did anything, but you have the Mexican big conglomerate owner leaving the ship. You have her falling out with someone and then calling her family, crying her heart out and stating that something's wrong. Then you have the family en route. So were they coming to get her, to take her out of the situation? I mean, it was her last day, by the way. When she died, it was her last date on that boat as a worker.
Yeah. So, again, why would she kill herself, you know? So, now, was there this crew member involved in it? There was a crew member who texted her 15 minutes before her death, right?
Yeah. I went to one of their Instagrams and kind of like dug around and got her last movements of that night. And it's interesting. It says that they were out boozing with friends. So the friends are going to be crewmates. Her and five crewmates went out to a bar, and it was the Barracoke Bar in Kefalonia. And they had a bunch of cocktails. And one of the cocktails is called like Dragon's Breath, Mango Mongave. And so they were there, and she even ate like a club sandwich. And they left the bar around 7:30 p.m., but she returned back at 1 a.m. and she was acting really wild, like more wild than normal. She was dancing in chairs and screaming and just, you know, just real, real, real wild for her. Okay, so
but
then
she didn't
have
any drugs or alcohol in her system.
Oh yeah, that's my problem with this story. Yeah, so the bar owner said she was absolutely crazy. By 1:30 a.m., she's back on the yacht. Okay, she's upset. Supposedly there is a crew member that is consoling her in some fashion. And then by 2 a.m., she's hanging off the back of the yacht with two ropes around her neck. What in the heck happened within those last 30 minutes?
I don't know. Somebody said that, okay, so when the employees became former employees, then they kind of started talking a little bit about it. And it seemed kind of normal at first because 18-hour workdays are totally normal on a super yacht, totally 100% normal. But then they were talking about the prostitutes and that there was, remember, she was only on there for a week or so, and then sexually inappropriate guests, there was rampant drug use. And then some had said that she might have been upset about a relationship that was ending. You know, all the theories are kind of half believable.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, it doesn't make sense in the fact that she would want to end her life knowing that everybody is in the air coming to see her.
And that, you know, she would have a chance again to pursue this same type of activity if she loved it that much. She loved the yacht life and being on Instagram and being fawned over and all that she was going to get it again as soon as Yacht Week picked right back up. So she had that opportunity. Yeah, do we think that she had some help getting into those ropes and perhaps being pushed off? I mean, was she pregnant? Has she been raped? Was someone forcing themselves upon her? Because, I mean, she was obviously lit. The bar owner said she was dancing in chairs and yelling. So, you know, what happened? Did someone come on to her? Did she think that she had a relationship that was maybe more deeper than what the guy on the ship thought that it was? Was it one of the Mexican family members?
I don't know. And, you know, and the Greek port authorities originally said, hey, you can't leave the port. The yacht couldn't leave the port. They wanted to review the autopsy results first, you know, because they couldn't, you know, determine whether or not a crime had been committed. But before the autopsy had even been completed or reviewed, somebody higher up in the chain in law enforcement allowed the yacht to disembark back into international waters with the 23 crew members on board, all those witnesses. And police had said, oh, well, we conducted an investigation. We're satisfied. And then they could get supplemental, you know, statements later. You know, I mean, come on.
Oh, that's yeah. And this is the sad part. She's Australian. So, again, she has no ties to Greece. The Australian Department of Foreign Affairs did step in and try to help the family and try to mitigate what was going on in Greece. And Greece was like, sorry, can't help you. You know, as soon as a prosecutor is assigned to the case, we'll go from there. Of course, litigation went nowhere. Family hires an attorney, both Greek and Australian, gets nowhere. Pulled a little bit of forensics from her phone. My whole thing is did she have actual control of her phone? You and I have covered cases to where text messages can go back and forth, and they weren't even sent by the person who
we talked about one like that. I don't remember which one it was. It was somebody in a car. And, yeah, because if you have a phone, you can send a text, you know? And it, like you said, I mean, this was a gruesome death. The parents were warned not even to come to the morgue to view the body.
Don't you think that's odd? Don't come view your daughter's body. Okay, how would you know it was your daughter? You need that closure. A family member should ID the body, and also you should definitely have it looked over by your own forensic pathologist since it's out of the country. But don't come view. I thought that was so odd. And the fact that the toxicology was either lost or the toxicologist, the ME said, I had to wait 20 days to get tox samples.
No, okay. They had to wait longer than that. It was 20 days short of, I think, 9 months, because I saw an article. They didn't get him back until 2019 sometime or something like that.
That's crazy. And, do you know how long that body was laying in the morgue? I mean, the longer a body sits. Okay, like when you take drugs or you take alcohol, a live body will process and metabolize that very quickly. A dead body will metabolize it even quicker. So the longer she sat on that cold slab and they did not draw blood, urine, bile, hair, any of that stuff, they were allowing the narcotics or whatever was in her system to completely just go away.
Yeah, so it could have been some drug that was a debilitating drug that somebody gave her, you know, and the coroner was just all the time pushing, oh, it was death or it was a psychological push to act on suicide. And her parents were like, okay, no. And, you know, it's kind of, I'm glad that her parents were on the way there anyway, so they could kind of be there and, you know, and of course there was a cover up. And of course, you know, they hired an attorney, but they were screwed from the beginning, because of the fact that you got the, you know, 25th richest person in the world and everybody and however much he's paying him, and it's no skin off his nose to pay them an extra $250,000 each. It's only 23 crew members.
And, no, and he is the most secretive. I mean, we're talking about no photos allowed inside of his yacht, not any. And he even has invisible balconies, invisible rooms, rooms that drop down into other rooms. This guy is not letting anything off that yacht.
And then the local media, they were interested in it, and they tried to, you know, talk to one of the employees of the yacht that had worked with Sinead. And they said, nope, you know, it's a matter for the Port Authority. That's their job, not yours. And then a local bar owner said, you won't find too many people who will want to talk about this. It's not that they don't care. It's just that people like this, that sort of boat, it's difficult to get the right information. If she was on board a luxury ship and those associated with such vessels, guard the information closely.
And yeah, so what he's saying is that we would all like to continue to breathe air, so we will not be commenting further. And from what I see, you know, years later, at least 2 years later, there's still been no more about what caused her death, what led her to it. Who knows?
And this is, you know, like I said, with Sinead, you know, it's just, I mean, that yacht cost about $200 million. I mean, so one of the things, it's just, I know it's a cover-up, but this is kind of what goes on. This is the dark side. What Jen and I are talking about the whole episode is that this was one that was actually published, and because it was more of a worker rather than a yachter. This is somebody that the parents knew that she was on this ship. This is parents who were flying into the country already. But imagine if it's just some Eastern European yachter who's 20 years old who has left Ukraine or something like that and gone to the Mediterranean. The parents have no idea what yachts or ships she was going on for a night or for a week or anything like that. And if something like this, they could have just tossed her overboard. And who's there are no questions because nobody will know where she was. Or if they did, they'll say, oh, well, that crew member doesn't, you know, isn't on this ship anymore. They went back to their own country. They went back and they're on a different ship, whatever. It's just too easy to get away with stuff in these kind of situations. And this is just one time where everybody, even though everybody knew there was something going on and there was some kind of cover up, that they still couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, girls and boys also. You have the boys that are actual deckhands. Yeah, they're documented as being on the boats. They fall off and die, and the boat, they pull up the anchor, they take off, and then the parents say, why didn't you look for my son? And they said, oh, don't worry. We threw flowers overboard, and we sent his belongings to the police. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I mean, that was a Russian billionaire super yacht.
Yes.
And, I mean, and the captain, I mean, just so... you know, rude, don't worry, we threw some flowers over the side, yeah. And then we gave his belongings to the police, so you're not going to be able to look at anything like that, you know? It just, and there's been other ones like that, and it's just because it happens at sea, then it's, you know, it's just, oh.
Yeah.
I know, you know, and the thing is that I know that this is going on with just, you know, yachters, and it just, it's too easy to get away with stuff. There's no, and that's the same reason Epstein had his, you know, his island in the Virgin Islands. He could get away with stuff there that he, you know, it's a lot easier to do those kind of things, and you can, because he was watching. And then, you know, he started flying in people from Eastern Europe because he was tired of, you know, these girls from Palm Beach and stuff who were telling their friends and telling their mom and causing him to be in trouble. So then what did he do when he got out of jail? I'm just going to start importing them from Eastern Europe and also from South America. And, you know, these people have nobody. I'm keeping them, you know, isolated, and I can do whatever I want. I can pass them out to my arms dealer friends and all this kind of stuff. And nobody's going to come looking for them because we've already given their parents money.
Yeah, when you own every which way to Sunday to transport people in that are undocumented, then you have it made. You had him. He helped build the Limitless yacht that belonged to Wexner. So when people say that Epstein had a yacht and women were on it and, you know, not all those women were accounted for, they're talking about the Limitless. I know a lot of people are like, he didn't have a yacht. Well, yeah, he did because he had Wexner's. Then he has the Gulfstream. He's got Ghislaine in her helicopter. You know, Ghislaine has submarines.
Yeah, and then he also the Victoria's Secret jets, and we don't have those flight logs.
Yes, so. And then, of course, other men in the book that rented planes for a living, sold planes for a living, and then, of course, you have the good old Air Force, you know.
Yeah.
that one.
Well, so. Jen, this has been a journey, yes. through But, you know, I'm glad we had this because I think that people don't necessarily understand exactly the rules of international waters and how easy it is to get away with stuff when you have money and really murky laws and how vulnerable people are. And that's why when you look at the case of Sinead, you see, okay, this is somebody who had every kind of thing going for her in the, you know, ability to be identified and have some kind of repercussions against somebody. And even in that case, you know, there was nothing anybody could do.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I hope that you have a very safe weekend. And I can't wait to see what we come up with for next Friday. It's gonna be tough to top this one.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. That's a challenge.
All right. Well, you have a great weekend, and I will talk to you soon.
You too. Bye.
Bye.